Chapter 12. Mr. Brownlow and Noah Claypole return. Rose passed a sleepless and anxious night thinking of Nancy's visit. Who could she tell? Not Dr. Losburn or Mrs. Maley or Harry. The next morning, Oliver returned from a walk and ran into her room.
"What's the matter?" asked Rose.
"I've seen him. I've seen Mr. Brownlow getting out of a carriage and going into a house. He didn't see me, but I've written down the address."
"We'll go at once," said Rose,
and in 5 minutes they were in a carriage.
"Wait here. I'll go ahead to give Mr. Brownlow the news," Rose told Oliver when they reached the house.
A servant took her to the old gentleman's study.
"Mr. Brownlow, I believe, sir," Rose said.
"I shall surprise you very much when I tell you I have news of a dear young friend."
"Is that so?" said Mr. Brownlow. "May I ask his name?"
"Oliver Twist," replied Rose.
Mr. Brownlow was amazed.
"My dear young lady, what news can you tell me of this poor child?"
Rose told him everything that had happened to Oliver since he had left Mr. Brownlow's house in Pentonville.
"Thank heavens," said Mr. Brownlow. "But where is he? Why haven't you brought him here with you?"
"He's waiting outside in the carriage," replied Rose. "But before he comes in, there's something I need to tell you in private."
She told him about her meeting with Nancy and the shocking news the young woman had trusted her with.
"We must take great care," said Mr. Brownlow. "We must find out about Oliver's parents and get back what belongs to him. Your promise to the girl will be kept, my dear young lady, but we need to see her again. Let's meet with her on Sunday night, but meanwhile we must keep this secret, even from Oliver."
Without another word, Mr. Brownlow hurried from the room. In a moment he had returned with Oliver and called for Mrs. Bedwin. As soon as he saw her, Oliver ran into her arms.
"It is my innocent boy," cried Mrs. Bedwin. "I knew he would come back. I knew it. How smart he looks, dressed like a gentleman's son again. Oliver, where have you been this long time?"
In only a few days, Nancy grew pale and thin, anxious about what she was planning to do. On Sunday night, she was at home, listening as Bill and Fagin talked. When the bells of the nearest church struck 11 p.m, she got up, put on her hat and shawl, and went to the door.
"Where are you going?" demanded Sykes at once.
"Not far, just to get some air," said Nancy.
"Put your head out of the window instead," said Sykes, getting up and locking the door.
He pulled Nancy's hat from her head and threw it to the ground.
"I don't need a hat to go out," said Nancy, turning white. "What are you doing, Bill?"
In answer, Sykes grabbed her and dragged her to another room, where he pushed her onto a chair and held her down.
"Let me go, Bill! Let me go!"
cried Nancy as she struggled against him. But when she heard the clock strike 12 a.m, she gave up fighting and Sykes left her alone.
"What a wild girl she is," said Sykes to Fagin.
Fagin nodded, but kept his opinion to himself. He had wondered whether Nancy was growing tired of Bill and had found a new friend. The strange way she behaved tonight made him certain of it. As Fagin walked home, his mind was busy with these thoughts.
Nancy must know that if she leaves Bill, she will never be safe from his anger, Fagin said to himself. And what will Bill do to her new friend? But suppose Nancy could be persuaded to get rid of Bill first. She might agree to poison him. Women like her have done such things before. And the man I hate would be gone.
On the night that Nancy helped Bill Sykes to sleep with laudanum, two people arrived in London on foot. One was a tall young man with long, thin legs like sticks. The other was a young woman, short but strongly built, who carried a large bag on her back. They had walked a long way and were looking for somewhere to stay the night. Mr. Noah Claypole stopped in front of a pub and looked up at the sign, The Black Dog.
"Give me the bag and come inside," said Noah to his wife. "Keep close behind me and don't speak unless you're spoken to."
He pushed open the door of the pub with his shoulder. They appeared to be the only customers. Noah asked for some beer and cold meat, and the pair of them sat down to their supper.
"I mean to be a gentleman," said Noah to his wife, straightening out his long legs in front of him. "No more miserable old coffins for me. And if you like, you shall be a lady."
"I should like that," replied his wife. "But when the £20 you stole from the undertaker's is gone, what then?"
"There are pockets we can empty, and women's purses, and houses, and banks," said Noah. "I shall look for some friends who may be useful to me."
A man in the corner was listening. He got up, went over to Noah and his wife, and bowed.
"A fine evening," the stranger said to them. "You're from the country, I see."
It was Fagin.
"How do you know that?" asked Noah.
"We don't have as much dust as that in London," replied Fagin, pointing at Noah's shoes.
"You're very clever," said Noah.
"You have to be in this town," said Fagin in a whisper. "And if it's pockets you want to empty, I might be a useful friend to you."
Noah went pale, realizing the stranger had overheard their conversation.
"Don't worry, my dear," said Fagin. "I only heard you by chance, and I'm in that kind of business myself. I like the look of you, and I can help you."
"Would I have to pay?" asked Noah,
touching his pocket where he had the £20 note.
"Most definitely," replied Fagin.
£20, though, it's a lot of money," said Noah.
"Not when it's useless to you, because it's a note that will be stopped at the bank. People will know it's been stolen."
"So what will I get?" asked Noah.
"You'll live like a gentleman," said Fagin. "Come to my house tomorrow morning at 10.
He told Noah where his house was. And so it was that Noah took the place of the Dodger, who had recently had the bad luck to be arrested.